As I mentioned last week, I talked about this article I was doing on the NYU University School of Law had put together this report warning that digital identity was, in their own words, potentially paving a digital road to hell, a road where human rights violations would be rampant, privacy would be absent, and ultimately, liberty, I think as most people see it, would be gone because of the threats posed by digital identity. So we're going to pick up the conversation from there. I encourage you, if you didn't hear that story, go check it out last week. You can also find the article that I wrote for it at thelastamericanvagabond.com. It's titled "New York School of Law Warns Digital ID Paving a Digital Road to Hell." And that kind of builds on another article I did months ago called "Exposing the Digital ID as a Human Rights Scam." And this is kind of where the conversation today is. I think we is a good starting point as we move through what's happening in the U.S. and then look at what's happening internationally in relation to digital identity biometrics. So we got the New York School of Law, their Center for Human Rights and Global Justice. They've actually been talking about these kinds of concerns for a couple of years, and they put out a 100-page report detailing these threats. They looked at India's Aadhaar Foundation biometric ID system, and they show examples of human rights violations and of it, despite all the talk of it being inclusive and helpful for the poor, not really always working out that way and rarely working out that way. They kind of take note how there is a network, what they describe as a network of key global actors like the World Bank, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, the OMIDR network, and then different governments and foundations and tech companies that are actively promoting this need for digital identity and biometrics. And just get into some of the dangers of it. So that's sort of the background for this. Now, the article that I want to talk about today is from FCW.com, and it's talking about a digital identity bill. This is about a week old, but it's still really important right now. Digital identity bill sees action in the House and Senate. And it's just sort of like I think a little vague overview for myself, but it's making the point that the US government is, and has been for a while, but this is the latest attempt, is considering digital identity legislation. This one's called the Improving Digital Identity Act, first introduced by Representative Bill Foster of Illinois in 2020, but it was never voted out of the committee. Now it's kind of coming back and it's been reintroduced. So the House committee just last week, before they recessed, they voted on this bill and others to get them out of the committee and continue to work on them. So it goes into that, just talking about the different way the government is going to try to actively promote digital identity, things of that sort. But I came over here to congress.gov and found the bill. It's Senate Bill 4528, Improving the Digital Identity Act of 2022. And let me see if I can find the section. There's a section here where I thought it was interesting, Micah, that the whatever official, somebody was able to get this in here where it basically would say that they couldn't make the digital identity a requirement for like regular life, or it couldn't be used as, like trying to sort of, I guess, preempt potential for it to be used in pretty nefarious ways. I can't find the exact text right here at this moment, but I'll pull it up and just, okay, here it is. It says the bill has a new section prohibiting the task force, this task force on digital identity, from recommending the creation of a single identity credential or a central national ID registry, as well as, quote, a requirement that any individual be forced to use digital identity verification for a given public purpose. So again, they're kind of like, if the bill passed, it would basically lead to, a task force being created and a report. Like, it's not immediate legislation or anything like that. But they're trying to preemptively say, hey, like this committee or this task force cannot recommend digital identity be used for general purposes, like, kind of just in creating the purpose of creating a national ID base. So, yeah, before we take it international, what do you think about that? I mean, is this just all but an inevitability at this point after we saw things like immunity passports, vaccine passports, and digital identities normalized in that way? You think this is just, it's going to happen one way or the other?
I think sometimes just putting bills forward, makes it go into the dialogue, right? So then, whether it passes or not, it's in the discussion. But the other aspect of this is if they're not going to make it, required for any public, not required in that manner, then what's the real point of it? If they're not going to have a repository of it, what's the point of it? So what? They're going to have multiple repositories of it because it'll be on multiple blockchains or what? I mean, I'm not sure what the language means to our everyday existence and how that ties into people's concerns about digital identity, you know, concerns like, you know, Fourth Amendment or privacy or identity theft, economic crimes, those sort of things. So I'm not really sure, you know, this is a lot to unpack, and I think it'd take more than one of our episodes, but I think those are the type of questions we need to be able to ask. And not just with this bill, but with probably all of them. And they're always, what did you get? Was the purpose of it then, Derek? If it's not going to be used in any of those ways, what's the purpose of it?
I mean, I think that there's a chance for one, like this thing is super early, right? So they just got voted out of committee at the moment. So, I mean, that the language could completely change and that whole thing could get struck by the end of this bill's life if it does become law. So that's one thing, right? Just because they put that in there now doesn't mean it's going to stay there. But yeah, you're right. If that does stay in there, then it gets the point of like, what's the whole purpose of that? I think overall, even if it's like this particular bill, what do they call it? Identity Act or whatever. Isn't the one that there's a new digital national ID card, whatever, that you have to use to get in and out of everywhere. Even if that bill isn't this one, I think overall it still is a process of normalizing the need for that. And that's what this NYU report was talking about, how you have these different institutions, think tanks, Bill and Melinda Gates foundations, groups like that, and in the UK and US government and the World Bank and World Economic Forum, certain players that are putting out reports and promoting this idea that digital identity is necessary. It's how we're going to get the unbanked into the modern world and how we're going to save all the people and make the world better and yada, yada. And so there clearly is somebody clearly has an agenda or a desire for the people to adopt this and to push this on the people. I don't think it's coming from the bottom up, ground up people. I mean, I haven't met too many people out on, you know, the countryside, the indigenous people of Mexico who are begging for digital identity. You know what I mean? Like, I think that's one thing to take away as well.
You don't ask your friends for their digital ID to prove them who they are?
I don't typically, but also to, you know, make it even more real is, I don't know if we've talked about, I'm sure we have over the last couple of years, but I'm sure some people out there have seen it in different states. There's already what they're calling DDLs, digital driver's licenses, that are starting to become a thing in certain U.S. states. And I even saw somebody say in New Zealand that's a thing. And I wanted to just show two other examples before we get to Sri Lanka and this discussion around digital identity, but also just the digital world in general. The digital identity, I think it's clear it's going to be a part of the central bank digital currency system. Well, just being reported by the Free Thought Project, the Office of Financial Research, which is an independent bureau within the U.S. Department of Treasury, has basically put out a paper calling for central bank digital currencies as a way to counter bank runs. I just want to mention that, you know, we don't have time to get into that. Another one, how I was just talking about the NYU School of Law. Well, now we also got this other organization, which I'm not sure, we want to fully trust them, but it's a special report from the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace that also says that AI-driven, artificial intelligence-driven surveillance signals the death of privacy. They specifically call it a digital authoritarianism in one of their new reports. So, you know, this conversation is becoming more and more clear to people who are paying attention. It's not something that's on the front page of CNN. It's not something that's going to be in the, you know, on most corporate mainstream media for various reasons. But these are things that I really think are going to either signal the freedom that we may have left or the end of it, right? And, you know, here's an example. A couple of weeks ago, we're talking about Sri Lanka, that small nation, people sick of, there was protests for a lot of reasons, but part of it was gas taxes and hikes and food prices and things of that sort, which we're also seeing in the Dutch protest and other places happening. Well, we saw people storming the capital, right? Not the U.S. capital, but the palace, the Sri Lankan palace, and the president having to leave, and people in the pool, and it was like, wow, what's going on? We talked about last week how the protesters said they were not going to give in. They're going to keep protesting until things change. Well, then it was announced, a new policy by Sri Lankan Minister of Power and Energy, Kanchana Wijesekera, apologies for that, at the behest of Sri Lanka's new president. They now have a new president, Ranil.
See that guy in the pool.
Yeah, I didn't see him. But this president just comes out of nowhere. And guess what? He's a member and agenda contributor of the World Economic Forum, those folks who are behind the push for what they call the Great Reset. We can see here's his page right here. Already updated. He's the Prime Minister of Sri Lanka. Wow, that was quick. They got him updated and ready to go. And he's the new prime minister. And so the Minister of Power and Energy, at the behest of this new prime minister, who's a member of the World Economic Forum, has announced a QR system in order to get gas. quote, after initial technical issues, FuelPass QR system was successfully tested today. The pilot project will continue before going national next week. Last digit number plate fuel quota will ease the fuel lines in the next few days with distribution speeding up worldwide. I thank the fuel station owners who supported, the public that adopted and assisted, forces and volunteers that assisted. Some stations did not adopt it. Some individuals manipulated QR codes and didn't want this implemented. However, it will be enforced island-wide. And this is their new thing, a national fuel pass in order to get gas. This is their way of dealing with the ongoing problem. And for those who are watching on screen, we have a video here from Twitter showing Sri Lanka requiring citizens to have fuel pass QR code to ration the weekly amount of fuel. And you can see a video here with them looking at the application, and it's telling them, I think, the amount of fuel they've used that week, and it's showing regular folks here scanning their QR code to get the information of how much gas they get this week for their rations. And then there's another video, army and fuel stations in Sri Lanka after the government decision to ban the sale of petrol and diesel to non-essential vehicles. So, you know, this is a pretty, and like I told you, Micah, a couple of weeks ago when I was in Mexico near the border, I was getting nervous feeling the gas running out, but I didn't think anything like, wow, what if I had to get a QR code just to get gas?
Well, separate from the QR code, I mean, this is the power of it, right? It allows them to shut it off for everyone, anyone. That's the power of a central bank digital currency too, for the economics to be managed right down to your individual, you know, monetary plan. But I thought that was really interesting that, you know, we talked last episode a lot about the economics, as well as we've mentioned Sri Lanka a few episodes now and just the turmoil going on there. But talking about it from an economic perspective, are we surprised with what's been happening with the government's reactions to what's been happening, that at this point now they're, you know, restricting the sale of gas to basically themselves and, you know, their approved cronies or whatever? I mean, because it's only essential vehicles. So we maybe it's ambulances and that sort of thing only, but I tend to doubt it.
Yeah, I don't know. I think maybe you're right. Maybe it is like some things that make sense, like emergency vehicles and stuff like that. But I would doubt that it's going to be as just simple and, you know, lacking in corruption like that, especially because this change seems to be pretty quickly, happened quickly. The people are upset. One of the prime ministers being run out, and then now there's a new one. And then he announces, like, hey, this is the way we're going to deal with this in a way that is totally.
He's a one way, guy.
A way that I think is totally in line with things like the World Economic Forum's plans or discussions around, you know, vaccine passports, immunity passports, digital identities, CBDCs. These are all ideas that the World Economic Forum has been promoting, not just since the beginning of COVID-19, but for years when the chairman of the World Economic Forum, Klaus Schwab, wrote books like The Fourth Industrial Revolution back in 2016 and has been talking about that. So they see this as technology and is going to be, you know, the kind of center of our world. Smart cities, AI, facial recognition, social credit scores, central bank digital currencies, digital identity, and that it's going to be good for the environment, sustainable, diverse, inclusive, all this stuff. But, I mean, what we're trying to share here in this little section is that it doesn't necessarily, there's no guarantee that that's going to be the case. And I want to also remind Michael, you just made me think of this, that we covered this a couple of weeks ago. There was this story that was reported by The Independent in Ireland about some documents that they got access to showing that there would be, the Irish government was planning for lockdowns and work for home plans in case of a crisis caused by the Ukraine war. This is specifically a high-level planning exercise that proposed three fuel supply deficit scenarios. So this was specifically about, hey, what do we do if there's a fuel shortage? And one of them included encouraging people to walk, encouraging people to stay home, lockdowns, you know, stay home for the climate kind of thing. All non-essential workers, there's that word again, being ordered to work from home, limit placed on non-essential car travel, strict limit on the amount of fuel motorists can buy, implementation of an immediate and strict reduction in the speed limit, things like that. So, yeah, I mean, clearly these discussions have been had by certain governments, and maybe some of them are looking at what's going on in Sri Lanka and thinking like, if only we had a system like that in place.
Yeah. And I think some of those thoughts just come naturally to governments, especially unrestrained governments, you know. So I think they're always trying to solve future problems that, you know, get out there and appear to sell solutions. So, yeah, it's interesting. We'll see what happens. I think following what happens in Sri Lanka will be, you know, show us some things. I'm sure that when stability does return, whatever modicum of it is, will be sold the entire time that it's due to all these great implementations of the World Economic Forum's plan.
Since 2012, the Conscious Resistance Network has been an independent media organization focused on empowering individuals through education, philosophy, health, and community organizing. We work to create a world where corporate and state power do not rule over the lives of free human beings. Our motto is leading by example and helping others in their pursuit of freedom. Visit theconsciousresistance.com to find our articles, documentaries, interviews, podcasts, books, and more. Remember, you are powerful, you are beautiful, and you are free.